And we're holding on page 44 in Sanhedrin, the fifth line of the wide lines, middle voice memvov. We were in the middle of discussing like this. The Mishnah had said that dinim momnus and dinim nefoshes both require drusha v'chakira, careful interrogation, close examination of the edim. But on the other hand, we said that there's a braisa that says that no, that dinim momnus do not require drusha v'chakira. So we were going through several different answers that the Gemara gives how to reconcile those. First, we said that min haTorah they would both require drusha v'chakira, but Rabbi Chanina says the Chachamim remove that requirement by certain dinim momnus because shalaitino delos b'fnei loyven, so people are not discouraged from lending money, figuring that there's too much of a likelihood that they may not be able to get it back. Then we had Rava's explanation that there's a difference between dinik knosis and hojois and halvois. Dinik knosis, where there's no loan anyhow, there's no tinal delos because there's nothing to there's no request for a favor such that the other guy might say no because I don't want to get my money back. By definition, dinik knosis is somebody caused somebody else a hezek and now has to pay for it. So now, some more answers on the subject. Rav Papa Omer, Aidi v'Aidi b'Hoidah v'Halvah, both the Mishnah and the Braisa are talking about cases of Hoidah v'Halvah, where Reuven admits in front of Edim that he owes money to Shimon, or where Edim actually saw Shimon lending money to Reuven. The difference would be, kan b'din meruma, kan b'din she'en meruma. The difference would be, is there a reason to suspect that there's a false claim going on over here, as Rashi points out? For example, they know this claimant, this plaintiff, and they know that he's the type to bring up false arguments in Beis Din, or they can read between the lines of what he's saying and realize that there's something wrong, there's something false about his claim. So then they have an obligation to interrogate the edim more carefully in order to find any discrepancies. Kan b'din shenim, and that would be what the Mishnah is saying, that you need drusha v'chakira in dinei momonos. Kan b'din shenim meruma, whereas the Braisa is talking about a normal case where, fine, you're obviously not taking every one of the bali dinim at their word, as we have in Pirkei Avos, when the bali dinim are in front of you, consider them like l'shoyim. Don't take as a given anything they say, but still, it's not din meruma. It's not that specifically you have a particular reason to think that they're lying about something. It's just in general. You know, a person is Adam Korovitz a last night, a person is going to try to put the best face on his arguments and avoid saying things that are not favorable to his cause and so forth. So you have to check it out, but you don't necessarily need to go through that rigorous judicial hakira to find it out.
Cross examination.
Yeah. Tosfos points out that actually now there's different kinds within din meruma itself that can have more than one meaning. If it means, in other words, that Beis Din actually has reason to suspect that there really is literally false testimony going on over here, and they're not going to be able to shake the edim, then they should just recuse themselves from the case, and they should just say we can't judge such a case. The Gemara tells us in Shavuos, and it's going to have to be left up to Hashem to judge, or another Beis Din that's going to be able to handle the case better. So here we're not talking about to that degree of din meruma, where we really are talking about we can tell there's something really fraudulent going on over here, but we don't have the ability to get to the bottom of it. We're talking about, as Rashi says, where we have reason to know this fellow is typically a Ramai, or there's something missing, there's some kind of discrepancy in what he's saying. Then we need a Hakiru Jerusha, then we need a careful cross-examination to get to the bottom of that. Kidrish Lakish, as Rish Lakish in fact says, Dirish Lakish Rami, Rish Lakish pointed out a contradiction between two psukim. Here we were talking about a contradiction between the Mishnah and the Braisa, but Rish Lakish points out you actually have a contradiction between psukim themselves. One pasuk says you should judge your fellow yid with righteousness. So one time tzedek. Tzedek tildos, but then you have another pasuk that says that mentions tzedek twice. So what is it? It doesn't say, but tzedek tishper tamisacha. So implying one pasuk is saying you just need the ordinary amount of tzedek, and the other one makes it sound like you need much more. So Rish Lakish pointed out that contradiction, and the answer is, okay, so kan b'din meruma, kan b'din she'en meruma. So again, you have this difference whether a normal case, you just need regular tzedek versus a case where you have reason to suspect that there's not everything is on the up and up, where there you need tzedek, there you need to go the extra mile to find out the facts. As we talk about at the beginning of the Masechta, also in the first perek, the Gemara had mentioned the expression about a dayan who judges din emes lamitoi, and one of the explanations that Tosfos mentions in a number of places is din emes would be just to follow the actual halacha. Din emes lamitoi would be on top of that, a case like this we're talking about where the dayanim have reason to smell a rat. So now the dayanim might say, well, you know what, it's not our problem. We'll go through the motions, we'll go through the technicalities of how we have to judge the din Torah, and if the edim are lying and we weren't able to easily shake them, or the Bali din are lying, then it's their problem, not ours. Whereas din emes lamitoi would be that you're actually going to work to get to the bottom of that kind of thing. Okay, so that's another way. So again, so Rish Lakish pointed out that difference explains the expressions in the two psukim, and we can use that explanation, says Rav Papa, also to answer the difference between the Mishnah and the Braisa. Rav Ashi says, Mafnisim Kiddushaninan. As far as the Mishnah versus the Braisa, that I don't have anything new to add. We can use any of the three answers before. Midaraisa versus Midrabanan, different kinds of dinimominus, or different kinds of cases, Merumah or not. As far as that, says Rav Ashi, one of those three answers will use that. Kroy, as far as the psukim, which Rish Lakish was bothered by, is it Tzedek, or is it Tzedek, says Rav Ashi, for that we have a different answer. Echad the din ve'echad the pshara. That comes to teach us. Sometimes the Beis Din has to do an actual din. They have to decide what the actual verdict is, apitara. And sometimes you have sometimes the appropriate thing is to make a pshara. So tzedek is not talking about dirusha v'chakira. It's talking about tzedek, make your judgment be righteous, and tzedek, again, make your pshara be correct as well, making sure that you're being equally fair to both of them. Kedetanya, as we learn in the Braisa, now we talked about in the first parak, we had a multi-way machloikus, whether it's appropriate for a dayan to seek a pshara, or whether it should be yikav adina sahar. There may be a difference, we said, before it comes to Beis Din versus afterwards. There may be a difference before they have an idea which way the verdict is likely to go or not. But here we have another point as well, where sometimes the right thing to begin with is to make a pshara. Kedetanya, as in fact we learn in a braisa, tzedek tirdosh, when the pasuk says tzedek tirdosh, then that's echad the din v'echad the pshara. So the two tzedeks are, again, one where you have to judge an actual din tirda, and the other where the appropriate thing is a pshara. Ketzad, what is an example of din versus pshara? Suppose you have two boats that are trying to pass through in the river, in a narrow spot in the river, at the same time, and they encounter one another. If the two of them try to cross, each in their own direction, side by side, then they're both going to sink. Because not wide enough, both of them are going to end up scraping against the rocks or whatever, and they're both going to end up breaking and sinking. If they take turns, and they'll both be able to get through safely. The question now is going to become, if they belong to different people, which one has the right of way? Which one gets to go first versus which one has to wait? The same way, when you have two camels that are going up the ascent of Beis Choron. Beis Choron is a town in Eretz Yisrael. It's on the road between the coast and Yerushalayim. There was a very narrow pass over there on a very steep cliff, where again it's a very narrow pass, and people can only go through there single file. Nowadays, it's close to when you drive from Tel Aviv or anything in that, from Gush Dan, anywhere in that area, to Yerushalayim. One of the roads you can take is the 443. So this Milus Beis Choron is right next to that. So Pogru Zebazan, again, they encounter one another. Im Olu, if they try to both go at the same time, Shneim Neuflim, both of them are going to end up falling because the path is too narrow. Bazar Chazer, if they go one after the other, Shneim Olim, they'll both be able to go up safely. But again, the question is, which one should have to wait, and which one gets to go first? So how do we determine it? Why do we need, by the way, both ships and camels? Ben Yehoyada points out, on the one hand, you could argue with the ships, there's less of a hassle of it for the person to have to wait. The ship's not going to run away. The camel, meanwhile, may run away, and you have to feed it in between. On the other hand, you could argue, when it comes to Tzad Balachayim, if both camels are heavily laden, and you're making somebody wait with his camel loaded with a heavy load, it's going to be Tzad Balachayim for the animal, whereas with boats, you don't have that. So what do we do? So Tuuna v'sheina Tuuna, if one of them is loaded up with cargo and the other one is not, Tidocha sheina Tuuna mifnei Tuuna, then the one that's not carrying a cargo should have to give way for the one that is. The one who's carrying merchandise or whatever gets to go first. What if both of them are carrying or both of them are not? So if one of them is close to its destination and the other one is not, the one that's closer has to give way to the one that's further away, because they have a longer journey to take. You don't want to delay him any more than necessary. What if both of them are equally close? So both of them are equally distant from their destination. So the first part is actual din. When you have one of them is loaded up or one of them is closer to his destination, that's not even a matter of pshara, that's a matter of simple din, who gets to go first. Now, when both of them are on an equal level, hato pshara b'nehen, now is where you'd have to make a compromise between them, or malas schar, zulazu, and in that case, then one of them is going to have to compensate the other. I get to go first, which means I'm going to get to my destination faster, and you're going to have to wait, so I have to give you something to compensate for the fact that you're losing out. So here we see an example of din versus pshara. So the Braisa says, and Ravashi says, that's what tzedek tirdif means. There's a very, very famous story in connection with this Gemara involving in the early years of the state of Israel, when one of the things the government wanted to set up then was Gius Banot, is drafting girls into the army. It was tremendously controversial. The Gdolei Yisrael of that time were very strongly against it, and even Yehud, to the extent of Yehud Val Yaver. Our Rebbe, by the way, was new at that time in the Nesius. He was also very much against it, but he didn't want to come out publicly about it for a number of reasons. But you can find many letters in Igros Kodesh from the Yuds. You can find from talking all about this and what can be done, what kind of negotiation and pressure and whatever can be brought to bear on people in the government to not make it happen. In any case, the story, a well-known story, that Ben-Gurion then realizes, you know, if he goes and just rams the thing through, he's going to end up having a civil war on his hands. So he decides he has to go talk about it with the Chazon Ish. One version of the story I heard is he put on a hat and a bekisha. Whatever the case, he goes to talk with him. So the Chazon Ish tells him, listen, you know, you were back in the day, you were a yeshiva bacher, you know how to learn a black Gemara. And he quotes to him this Gemara over here. So he says, you know, consider then, we're in the same situation. We're like the camel that's heavily loaded. We have thousands of years of Torah and mitzvahs with us. You are like the empty camel. You're new at this. You don't have your whole philosophy, your whole ideology doesn't have that much of a history behind it. So based on this Gemara, it's only fair that you should give way to us. And then he goes on to say, you know, another way of looking at it is also, in the sense, we have less flexibility than you do. We don't have the flexibility to say that, to say, you know what, so the Torah says so, big deal, we can set that aside. He says to Ben-Gurion, you have more flexibility in this. It's not davka, you're not lahachis in this, it's not, you davka have to do against Torah. If you go along with it, it's also nishkan groysa avla. The upshot of it is that they went ahead with it, but they made exceptions for frum girls, and adayem azeh, the thing, this whole thing is still very controversial. So the Gemara goes on, Tanan Abanan, we learn in a Braisa, another meaning of this pasuk, tzedek tirdif, holachacha beis din yotzeh, means you should follow the best available beis din. Meaning, in other words, you can have a case where there's an argument, you have a din Torah between two people, and they're arguing which beis din should we go to. So try to find the best possible, the highest quality beis din that's available. Even if it means you're gonna have to make a little bit of a trip. Maoshar points out the expression tzedek tirdif, after all, tirdif, you should chase after it, suggests that we're talking about a din Torah. The Dayanim themselves, it says the Tzedek Tishpat Amisacha, so Tzedek Tirdif would refer to the litigants themselves. They should be chasing after and running after to find the best beis din that they can find. Another point, some of Foshim explain that this also Holachacha beis din Yofa is also referring to the concept of Heve Gola Lemkoin Torah, that you should go in Golos to find the best place to learn. So then also you should be, and Yaakov points it out over here, it means that you should be going to the best yeshiva available, the highest quality yeshiva that you can find in the world, or at least in your area, to be able to learn there best of all. For example, Acha Rabbi Eliezer Lelud. If you're in the area of Lud, go to Rabbi Eliezer's Beis Din. Each of these that we're going to list over here, each of the Tanoim that we were going to list over here, was the Rav and the Rosh Hashiva in his community. So Rabbi Eliezer lived in Lud, and therefore, if you're in Lud, then that's the preferable Beis Din that you should be going to. Acha Rabbi. What? Why are we saying twice?
You're saying twice seven.
Yeah, that's the thing. Tzedek, Tudif. No matter what, you want to find the best possible Tzedek and Tudif. You should be running to find it. That's what it means. Tzedek, Tudif. You should be running after to find the highest quality possible Tzedek. That's Marshall explains. The double expression, Tzedek, means it's referring to the Baalei Din themselves, that both of them should be looking for the Yet. So, Achar of Eliezer Lelud, Achar of Yechanan Zakeh LeBror Chayo. Another example, if you're in the area of Bror Chayo, you should be going to Rabbi Yechanan Zakeh's Beis Medrash for Dinei Torah or his yeshiva to learn Torah. So now, having mentioned Bror Chayo, the Gemara interjects something else. Bror Chayo was not exactly a place that's mentioned that often in Divrei Chazal, so therefore the Gemara takes a moment to digress and tell us something else about the place. We find, by the way, what happened was Rabbi Yechim and Zakeh had been the Av Beis Din of the Sanhedrin Gdola in Lushkas HaGozes, and later after they moved from Lushkas HaGozes and they were in other places in Yerushalayim. He was the Av Beis Din for a time. He was the acting Nasi. Then after the Beis Mikdash was destroyed, or shortly before it, when he tells us Pasionis Ten the Yavne v'Chachamel, so he moved to Yavne, reestablished the Sanhedrin there, and then, based on this Gemara and some other relevant places, it seems that what happened was after this is how Dovid Rishonim explains it, as Rabbi Yechon left Yavne in order not to overshadow Rav Gamliel, the new Nasi. Rav Shimon Gamliel was killed sometime during the war preceding the Churban, Yeshurim by the Romans, Yeshurim by the Biryonim, whatever the case. So now you have Rav Gamliel that's taken over as Nasi, but he's Lefi Erech Young. Rabbi Yechon and Zakeh is by this point over 100 years old, and he's a Talmud of Hill and Shammai, and if he remains there in Yavne, everybody's going to pay attention to him, and nobody's going to pay attention to Rav Gamliel. So he left and moved to this little town, Bror Chayil, so he'll continue to teach Torah over there, and to judge Dine Torah over there, and meanwhile, the field in Yavne will be left open for Rav Gamliel. So, the Gemara says, Tana, we learn in a Braisa, Kol Rechayim Bevuni. If you hear in the city of Bruni, it's the name of a place, if you hear a sound of millstones over there, then you should know this is a signal, Shavua HaBen Sham, it means that there's a Bris Milah going to be taking place over there. Because, in other words, there would be times when the Romans made Xeris against Mitzvahs, including Bris Milah, so they couldn't openly announce that there's a Bris going to be happening. So therefore, they would have the loud turning of millstones would be a signal to the people in the town, there's usually no Bris is taking place over here. Why Dapka millstones? It actually points out they would have to use those to grind up herbs that they're going to use to put on the Milah wound afterwards. Therefore, that became the local signal for that there's going to be a Bris Milah happening. And in the city of Bror Chayil, if you see that there's a lot of light of lamps during the day, or even by night, it actually points out, but you see a much larger number of lamps than normal, then this is also a simen, mishtasham, that there's a party, specifically there's a party going on over there. Mishta in Gemara terminology usually means a wedding. So again, the same idea. We know there were times when the goyim made gzeiros tibor lahegman tchila, a girl before she gets married has to first be with the local goyish warlord. So therefore, again, they couldn't necessarily announce the weddings publicly, but instead they would use this kind of signal of many lamps. Tosfos brings another, this is by the way why, Tosfos mentions, first of all, another explanation is the Mishka also refers to a bris, and Tosfos says this is why we have the minhag to have a lot of lamps and lights by a bris, and also this is where we have the minhag of holding torches or candles by a wedding, when the kala is circling the chosin together with the unterfirers, they're all holding candles, that's based on this. On this, that we're saying that they would have many candles there, there were many lamps and candles over there to represent that mishtesham, there's a wedding feast going on here. So the candles would be a simon for it. Then Yoda points out, also we have just like the Shabbos candles, for example, you light a married woman like two Shabbos candles for herself and her husband because you have the number of, we know that a man has 248 Evarim, and in Bechoris, the Gemara talks about that women have 252, the total of it equals 500, which is a Gematria twice Ner. So therefore, Ner is a very appropriate symbol for a wedding when a Chos and Kala are coming together. Tosfos also points out there's actually a pasuk that in Yumia that refers to these things. Kurechayim va'ur ner. Hashem says that if the Jewish people don't do tshuva and there's going to be a churban, then Hashem says I'm going to remove from the Jewish people the sound of millstones and the light of a candle. So we see, in other words, from that pasuk that they were using these signals already in the time of the first Beis Hamikdash. There's no Xeris of Goyim at that time. So Tosfos says that was the point. Originally, they used these as signs of simcha. It wasn't that they had to hide things, but they would have. They would make a public simcha. There's going to be a bris here. There's going to be a wedding over here. And in token of that, they would have a loud sound of millstones or the bright light of lamps. Later on, when they were in the time of the second Beis Hamikdash, and later, when they had to deal with Xeris of the Goyim, then they repurposed these same symbols and used them also as symbols to be able to tell people what's going on without the Goyim knowing about it. Getting back to the list of Beis Din Yafa, as the Gemara continues, Tanan Rabbanan Tzedek Tzedek Tirdif. When it says Tzedek Tzedek Tirdif, again, it means Holach Acher Chachamim Li Yeshiva, means follow the Chachamim to the best Yeshiva. So not just as far as Beis Din, but like we said, also as far as learning Torah. So starting the list over, Acher Rabbi Eliezer Lord. Again, if you're in the area of Lord, go to Rabbi Eliezer's Beis Medrash. Acher Rabbi Yechanan Zaka the Baruch Hayo. He was more. Acher Rabbi Yeshua Lepkiin. If you're in the area of Pekin, which is a town in the Galil, in the north of Eretz Yisrael, that's where Rabbi Yeshua has his yeshiva, go there. Achar Rabbi Gamliel, Yavne. If you're in Yavne, go to Rabbi Gamliel. He's the Nasi, and he holds court over there in his yeshiva. Achar Rabbi Akiva, Bnei Brak. If you're in Bnei Brak, then Rabbi Akiva is the local Rav and Rosh Yeshiva, go to his yeshiva. This is when we have the Seder that's described in the Haggadah, the five Chachamim who were there. So Rabbi Akiva was the local Rav over there, and apparently they were all guests of his. In fact, there's an explanation that's why you have in the list over there, Rabbi Akiva comes before Rabbi Tarfon. Now we find that Rabbi Tarfon was actually originally one of Rabbi Akiva's Rebbeim. So why is Rabbi Akiva placed fourth instead of last? So one reason is because he's the Balabas there. Achar of Masya Leroimi. If you're in Roimi, you should go to the Masya ben Chorosh is called in full in other places. On the face of it, Roimi means the city of Rome, and it seems that a Masya moved there and opened a Beis Medrash there. Yeshayim, and that Roimi may mean, and there may be a city of Eretz Yisrael of that name. Anyway, Achar of Chanina ben Tradian Sichni. If you're in the city of Sichni, which is another city in the Galil, go to Chanina ben Tradian. That's where he has his Beis Medrash. Achar of Yosi le Tzipori, in Tzipori, go to Rabbi Yosi's Beis Medrash. Achar of Yehuda ben Beseder le Nitzivin. If you're in Nitzivin, which is a town that's nowadays in like northern Iraq or southern Turkey or something like that, then go to Rabbi Yehuda ben Beseder. This is the one we have the famous story of the guy who pretended to be a Yid and went and ate the Korban Pesach every year. So Rabbi Yehuda ben Beseder was the Rav there in Nitzivin. Achar of Chanina ben Achir Rabbi Yeshua le Goyla. If you're in the Goyla, which means Pumbedisa, well, Goyla more generally means Bavel, but more specifically they use Pumbedisa, they use the word Goyla to refer to Pumbedisa because that was the center of Jewish life, one of the great centers of Jewish life in Bavel. Actually, historically, it was originally Nahardah, but Nahardah was destroyed, and Pumbedisa took it over, so they continued to, they thought from then on of Pumbedisa as being the successor of Nahardah as the center of Jewish life in Bavel. Anyway, Reb Chanina, the nephew of Rabbi Yeshua, was the Rav there in Pumbedisa, or in Nahardah, whatever. Achar Rebbe, Leveis Sharim, if you're in Beis Sharim, another town in the Galil, go to Rebbe's Beis Medrash. The Gemara mentions that Rebbe lived and Beis Shardim later on, when he wasn't feeling well, he moved to Tzipori and lived there the last 17 years of his life. Eventually, he was buried in Beis Shardim. You can visit nowadays. They found a lot of the burial caves over there, including one that seems to be from Rebbe. Anyway, so if you're in Beis Shardim, then Rebbe's Beis Medrash is the one to go to. Acha Chachamim, Lushkas HaGazis. And if you're in Yerushalayim in the times of the Beis Mikdash, go to the Chachamim in Lushkas HaGazis. That's the highest and best yeshiva that you can find. So all of these are examples of the Beis Din Yafa, the best yeshiva, or the best Beis Din and the best yeshiva that you can find in your area and in your time. Then Yehoyada points out one point of it is, we said before that sometimes you need extra drisha v'chakira to get to the bottom of things. He says they're calling these batei dinim Beis Din Yafa implies they don't even necessarily need that. The chachamim there are sharp enough to be able to find out the facts even without having to go through a tremendous rigmarole of drisha v'chakira. And in token of that, therefore, we call them Beis Din Yafa. Next, Pisgah, a quotation from the Mishnah, Dinim Mominas Machzirin Ben Meschus Ben Lechoyba. One of the Mishnah goes through many differences in procedure between Dinim Mominas and Dinim Nefashis. One of them is that in Dinim Mominas, whether the verdict was that the guy is whether whatever the verdict was, we can reverse it. We can call them back to Beis Din and say that the Psak Din was incorrect, and we have to rejudge the case. As opposed to by Dinim Nefashis, we don't do that always. If the guy was found guilty, then we can bring him back as many times as necessary and rejudge him if we have new evidence. But if we found that he was innocent, then we don't. We have to let him go, even if afterwards more evidence turns up that he was guilty. So the Gemara says, Raminu, I have a contradiction, though. So you're telling me about Dinim Mominas, we can call back and reverse the verdict. Or Raminu, but I have a contradiction. And Braisa says, Donas Adin, if a Dayan judged a case, and by mistake he declared innocent the one who's actually liable to pay, or vice versa. Masha also, what he did is done. We don't reverse the case. The Shalom Ibeisa, that he has to pay out of his own house, out of his pocket. So we see that we don't bring it back by dinin mominus either. What is the Mishnah telling us that you do? Rabbi Yosef, like Kasha Kan Mumcha, Rabbi Yosef draws a distinction between whether the Dayan is a Mumcha or not. If he's a Mumcha, then he has a certain. And he has a certain judicial immunity. He's an expert in dinim mominus, and he has smicha, and therefore we don't make him pay. As opposed to if he's not a mumcha, then we're going to make him pay for his mistake. Rav Sheshes gives a different explanation. Kan shatav b'dvar mishnah, kan shatav b'shikul adas. There's a difference whether the mistake was in a dvar mishnah, something which it says clearly in a mishnah. So then that's not considered a valid din Torah at all. That's not considered a valid verdict at all. Therefore, we would undo it and start over again. As opposed to if it was shikul adas, which the Gemara goes on to explain, shikul adas would be, for example, let's say you have a machloikas on a certain topic. Most of the chachamim hold according to a certain shita, but it hasn't officially been decided that that's the halacha, and the dayan passed in the other way. So we can't say that it's a blatant mistake. The fact is the halacha has not been passed in one way or the other, but since the preponderance of chachamim at that time hold the other way, then therefore we can call it tov shikul adas. And therefore, that's when we would say we don't undo the verdict, because after all, it could have been valid, but nevertheless, he had the guy who was wrong has a right to demand reimbursement. The later poskim talk about, here we talk about Mishnah versus Shikul Adas. What's included in Mishnah for that purpose also expands over time. For example, it's not just what's in the Mishnah. Later on, it's what it says Befedosh in the poskim, for example. As opposed to, again, Shikul Adas, you have like what is Mishnah versus what Shikul Adas is over time it expands and develops. You have things that in the times of the Gemara were still up for debate, but eventually the poskim paskin one way or the other, and then that's it. That's how it is. And that already becomes, in effect, Dvar Mishnah. It's brought, for example, that it's brought that Abayim said, for example, that if a Lubavitcher Dayan does not know something that's a Tzemach Tzedek said on the topic, that would be an example of Tov Dvar Mishnah. Okay. So the Gemara goes on. Eisved of Hamnuna Lid of Sheshis. So Rav Hamnuna points out to Rav Sheshis that I have a contradiction. So you're telling me Tov Dvar Mishnah Choizer that if he made a mistake and didn't know something that it says Befedosh in a Mishnah, then we undo the case. We don't make him pay. We instead start all over again. So we have a story in a Mishnah. And the Mishnah is discussing over there what kind of mumim passel an animal to bring a korban and whatnot. So the Mishnah says, "Ma'isiv porosh al beis Menachem." It happened once with a cow that belonged to a family, the family of Menachem. Shenitla ha'im shala, the womb of this animal had been cut out. Now, Reb Tarfon held that the animal was safe because of that. Ve'achila, Reb Tarfon the clothing. So Reb Tarfon made them feed the animal to the dogs, and la'kelav tashlichu noisei, so it's today for meat, and you have to feed it to the dogs. Uvom ma'isa, lifnei chachamim v'yavna. However, the case was brought to the chachamim in Yavna, v'hitiruha, but they said it's actually mutter. The meat is not safe, the animal is actually kosher. Because the womb is not considered a vital organ. Because they found, Todas, the doctor said, in part of a chazira yotzim Alexandria from Mitzrayim, they would not allow the government in Egypt would not allow there to be exported from Alexandria in Egypt any cow or any female pig elim ken chos kana aim shalah, unless first they cut out its womb to deshalay tail it so it doesn't give birth. They had very high quality cattle and pigs in Mitzrayim, and they didn't want them to be exported to other countries where they can have their own stocks for breeding them. So therefore, the authorities there would make sure that if you're going to take a cow or a female pig out of Mitzrayim, it first has to be sterilized by having its womb removed. So we see those animals go on and live long, healthy lives. Therefore, says Todos Hadosa, that shows clearly that the womb is not a vital organ. If it's missing, the animal is not Terefa. Well, meanwhile, Rab Tarfon said that it was Terefa. So Rab Tarfon says, almost like in a rueful, joking kind of way, there goes your donkey, Tarfon. In other words, now I'm going to have to sell my donkey to raise the money to pay the guy for having mistakenly declared his animal treif. Now, we find in a number of places that Rab Tarfon was actually pretty rich. So it's not like he's down to only a few dollars, where the only major asset he has is to sell his donkey. So why is he using this expression? So Ben Yehoyada points out a couple of possibilities. It can mean that, among others, he says it can mean that Rab Tarfon is saying to himself, you know what, for now what I'm going to do is so I always have a constant reminder never to make such a mistake again, I'm going to have to go and sell my donkey, even though I have plenty of other assets from which I can pay this guy. From now on, when I have to walk around on foot, it'll remind me all the time that I made a mistake over here and know to be careful in the future. He says another thing, Holcha Chamorcha can also be Chamorcha Moloshim Chumra. He says, why is Rab Tarfon declaring this animal treif as a Chumra? He wasn't sure whether it's kosher or not, so he declares it treif for Chumra. So now he's saying, Holcha Chamorcha Tarfon, you better get rid of your Chumra, and from now on, judge according to the actual thing rather than being Machmir to be on the safe side. Well, Omalei Rab Akiva, but Rab Akiva says, Rab Tarfon, you don't have to worry about it. Potter after, you're actually potter from paying. Chakola Mumcha Rabin Potter Malashalim, because anyone who is a mumcha l'rabim, anyone who is an expert dayan and is accepted by the rabbim as their dayan, is potter m'lashalim, he has judicial immunity, and we don't make him pay for his mistake. Now says Rav Hamnuna to Rav Sheshes, v'im Issa, if what you're saying is correct, that it's a matter of divine mishnah versus shikul adas lemalei, then why Rabbi Akiva should point it out to him a better point? Tell you divine mishnah, what you made a mistake is in a divine mishnah, because there is in fact a mishnah to that effect in Masechta Cholin, that if an animal's womb was removed, it's still kosher. But tell you divine mishnah choizer, and in that case it would be choizer, we would undo the case. So therefore you shouldn't have to pay. Sort of Sheshes' answer is that the Rabbi Akiva is making 2 points to him. The Gemara goes on to talk about what kind of chazara. The fact is, we already gave the meat to the dogs. There's no undoing that. So the Gemara continues to discuss exactly how Rabbi Sheshes would understand the case and how it fits with his shita. So Rabbi Sheshes is not contradicted by the story. By the way, a couple of Mephoshim asks, how did Rab Tarfon make such an elementary mistake? If it is the Divine Mishnah, then how does Rab Tarfon forget such a thing? And one explanation that's given is that Rab Tarfon might have held as a distinction whether the womb was just cut or damaged or whatever versus when it was removed entirely. You could say if it's injured or damaged or whatever, that doesn't passel the animal, that doesn't make the animal treif, unlike various other internal organs where even a hole or whatever in them is going to make them treif. But if the whole thing was removed, not necessarily, and the Chachamim said, though, we have Todos HaRofa's statement that the fact is even if the womb is entirely removed, then it's still kosher.
Sterilize animals.
You're not allowed to sterilize animals. First of all, whether you're allowed to do with females is a question in itself. When the Torah talks about Sirus, about how you're not allowed to sterilize animals, it's primarily talking about males, or moch v'chosus v'nosik v'chorus, various things that you might do to the genitals. But besides which, anyway, we're not talking about over here when we say that they wouldn't allow them to be exported from Alexandria. We don't mean Jewish governors over there. The pastors, we mean the Goyish, or the Greek, or Roman, or whoever it was that ruled over Alexandria. At that time, made this export rule, and they were the ones who would force it to be sterilized.
Okay. They
They can't do that. Yeah, they can't do Eid Menachai, but they can sterilize the animal. It's not later in the Masechta, when we talk about Shev Mitzvah Bnei Noach, we are going to have over there. There is in fact an opinion that Sirus is also to Bnei Noach. However, that's not accepted by Halacha. That's siddur. It's the castrating or sterilizing animals. There's an opinion there that's not allowed for b'nei noyach. Okay. Fine. Pisca, continuing with another quotation from the Mishnah, another difference. So we said, dinin nefashis machzirin l'schus ve'in machzirin l'choyba. When it comes to dinin nefashis, we do bring the guy back if we find new evidence to exonerate him, but we don't bring him back if we find new evidence to convict him, even though now we have clear evidence he's obviously guilty. Nevertheless, we don't. So the Gemara says Tana Rabbanan. So we learn in a Braisa, minayin the yotzim based in chayev. How do we know this? That if a person is leaving based in having been declared guilty, the omer echad yeshu lamed alav schus, and somebody speaks up and says, I have reason to argue on his behalf, minayin shemachziru no. You say, how do we know that we bring back the defendant and based in will listen to the new evidence? Tamad lema v'noki al tarag. Therefore, the pasuk says, do not kill an innocent person. And this person is noki because the new evidence may show that he's actually clean and innocent of the charges. Uminayim liyotzim based in zakai, vice versa. Well, we don't know, but the point is, there's a chance that he's noki. There's a chance that he's noki based on the new evidence. Therefore, don't kill him until you find that he's not noki. Minoki means a person who's innocent, or at least where there's possible evidence that he is. Yeah. Uminayim the yotzim based in zakai, vice versa. How do we know if he left based in having been exonerated? And somebody says, I have new evidence to convict him. Minayim shein machzirino. He says, how do we know we don't bring him back and rehear this evidence? Tamalang v'tzadik al tareg. Therefore, the posuk says, don't kill. The posuk says, v'noki v'tzadik al tareg. So the tzadik over here means this guy. Ken tzadik is inisht, but we mean tzadik in the sense over here, tzadik bedinari. Tzadik bedinari. He's been judged as being tzaddik, as being righteous and innocent of the charges, and therefore we don't bring him back and undo that. This is Altadeva points out on the first and second pages of Tanya. You know, we usually think of a tzaddik as somebody who has more mitzvahs than averus. Altadeva points out that's not the true meaning, but the fact is you do have something called tzaddik bedino. Yeah, a person who has more mitzvahs than averus. When Hashem judges him, then he'll come out innocent. But that's not what a tzaddik really is. There's an interesting pshat that says on this pasuk. So the whole pasuk goes like this: Midvar sheker tucha, keep away from a falsehood. V'noki v'tzadik al tara, don't kill a noki or a tzadik, as we're saying over here. Hashem says, kilei aftik rosha, I will not allow the rosha to be innocent and to go unpunished. So there's an interesting vort that says what are the three parts of this pasuk have to do with one another. Marcus Lehman brings it in his novel about Rabbi Yosselman of Rosheim, a famous Shadlan from 500 years ago. He puts it in his mouth. I don't know whether it's taka from him or from someone else, but in any case, the vort is like this. We know there's the case that we know the Gemara mentions Udiyu in the Masechta, that if the guy first comes to Beis Din, and immediately Beis Din says he's guilty, kulei zaka, kulei chayev, zakai, then we have to exonerate him, because it should have to be that there's some way of finding him innocent, and if not one of the dayanim to begin with can find that, then it means something's wrong over here, and we have to declare him innocent. So now the vote goes, imagine that one of the dayanim, so you have a Beis Din of 23 over here who are judging the guy, he sees that all of them are ready to vote for conviction right away. So he thinks to himself, well, in that case, then the guy's going to go innocent. He's going to go free. I don't want that. So fine, even though I know Taka, even though I have very good reason to say that he's guilty, I'm going to pretend that I think he's innocent, so that way we'll have 22-1, and that way we can have a din torah, and that way we can actually convict him. No, the pasuk says midvar sheker tircha. Why? Because as we're saying over here, v'noki v'tzadik al tarig, since there's grounds to declare him noki, you're tzadik, then you have to go do that. Are you worried the guy's going to get off scot-free? Don't you worry. Kilei aftik rasha. The Eibishter is going to make sure that the matter is taken care of in the end. If the guy Taka deserves his punishment, he'll get his punishment, and it's not your business to do a sheker in order to make that happen. Okay. So the Gemara says, Omer of Shiva Ashi the Sulufal of Mesis. The opposite is true as far as a Mesis. If a Mesis was found innocent and left based in, and now we have new evidence that he's guilty, we do bring him back. And if he was found guilty, then even if new evidence turns up that he's innocent, we're not going to bring him back. As the pasuk says, lo sachmo v'lo sachasa olav. You should not have rachmanos, and you should not cover up for him. Meaning, since we've already judged with the evidence that we have that he was guilty, or we have new evidence now that he's guilty, we can't cover it up, and we can't have rachmanos on him. We have to see it through. Rav Tahana Masnimi Ki Horeg Tar Genu. Rav Tahana says you have a different pasuk that expresses this idea. The pasuk goes on to say you must certainly kill him. Meaning, regardless, as long as you have evidence to kill him for being a Mesis, then you have to do that. Okay. The Gemara goes on, we say that we don't bring the guy back if we found him innocent, we don't bring him back to rejudge him, even if we find new evidence that he's guilty. So the Gemara says, however, that would only apply only if the mistake that Beis Din made was not in something that we don't have to be talking about new evidence. We can also talk about within the existing evidence that we had, the Dayanim realized, you know what, we judged wrongly. We should have weighed this evidence differently, or we didn't realize we forgot that there's some discrepancy in their edus that should have caused us to throw it out or whatever. So that's only if the mistake was a Dabashain Aksdukim Modim, or something which Tzdukim don't admit. We know the Tzedukim believe only in Torah Shebichtav. So if it's something that's not explicit in Torah Shebichtav, then we can say that it's considered, it's not a blatant mistake, and therefore we can say for it, there's a reason to say that it was, there's a certain validity to it, and therefore we'll leave well enough alone, or we'll leave well enough alone and not rejudge him. But if the mistake was something that says the Fedosh in the Torah, and even Tzedukim would agree to it, we don't consider that a valid verdict at all. Zil kore beiravu. That's something where even Tinokas Shabbos Rabban know it. You can go read it over there in Beirav, in Seder, and therefore that's not considered a verdict at all. So then that's considered, we don't have a verdict yet, and then if we declared him innocent on such a gross mistake, then we can in fact bring him back and rejudge him, even when he's not a Mesis. So the Gemara says, "Bamin Rav Chiya ba'Aba, Mer Rav Yechanan." So Rav Chiya ba'Aba asks Rav Yechanan, and in this connection, "Ta b'noya f'nei efes." Now, what if, for example, the mistake was as far as a couple that committed adultery? What happens if they declared them innocent by mistake? Now, it's one thing, in other words, it actually points out, by a writ seach, there's all kinds of details that are not mentioned before in the pasuk. Let's say, for example, you have the testimony was that Reuven killed Shimon with a rock. So you have later on in the sechta, it talks about you're supposed to evaluate the rock and see whether this is large enough and whether it was thrown with enough force that under normal circumstances it could kill. So that's the kind of thing. The tzedukim are not necessarily going to agree to that kind of thing, and it doesn't say befeidosh in the pasuk. Or other examples like that. But let's say by a noy from Ne'efes, there's really no wiggle room over there. There's no gray area. They either did it or they didn't. So Rav Chiya ba'Aba asked Rav Yechanan, in a case like that, if there was a mistake, what would we do? Omalei, so Rav Yechanan answers him with a popular phrase, Adam Moktach Yokid, while your fire is burning, Zil Koitz Korach, go cut up your pumpkin with soli and roast it. In other words, like in English, you say strike while the iron is hot. So while you're busy learning this topic, you're busy learning this sugya, then pay attention and think and derive for yourself new facets of it. You heard from me that there's this matter of Dabashat Zukim Moidimbo or not. Well, this is Dabashat Zukim Moidimbo. If they judged a Noya from Ne'efes wrongly, look, it says Befedosh in the Turtle is Sinach, and most you must have notified the office. So if they forgot something in that regard, yes, it's Dovashat Stukim Moidimbo, and therefore absolutely we would bring them back to Beis Din and rejudge them without that mistake. Okay. Yom Yom Mashiach Ogola, Yud Sivan. The Alter Rebbe talks about further in Tanya. We were talking about yesterday a piece of Tanya that the Alter Rebbe points out that nowadays our mitzvahs are to accomplish avodas avirurim, whereas lost and lover will be to create yichudim. So the Alter Rebbe goes on in that letter over there in Igeres Chavav to point out, look, you know, obviously in Yemos Mashiach we're surely going to have to know Hilchas Issa v'Heter. We're going to have to shech the korbanos and chulin, and you have to know the halachas of proper shchita, which are these days dafyomi as well, in order to be able to do that. You're going to have to know all these. A person is not adopted. Whatever points out, there's nobody who's born naturally with an inborn ability to be a shochet. You got it without shahiyah and jirasa and so forth. The knife also inevitably eventually gets nicked or damaged or whatever. So of necessity, you're going to have to learn these halachas, the Moshe Mashiach as well. And the Alter Rebbe goes on to say that, yeah, they're going to have to know Hilchas Issa v'Heter and Tumah v'Tahara. However, as the Alter Rebbe goes on to say, the aspects of Nigla are going to be known instinctively by every Yid, automatically, without any forgetfulness, and we're not really need to be Oisik in that. So the Oisik HaTorah is going to be more in Pnimius of it. The actual Dinim, yes, people are going to have to learn, but they'll only have to learn them once, and then they'll know them without any forgetfulness. Continuing on halachas of tzitzis, we talked about yesterday that you're allowed to take tzitzis strings off one beged and put them on another one. Now, though, what happens if the old ones that you're taking off the old beged, if one of them was whipped? So now we learned a couple of simanim ago that when the tzitzis strings, if one or sometimes more of the strings were ripped, then you can still wear the tzitzis as long as it's kedei aniva, as long as you have what's left is enough to be able to make a bow knot, as we learned about over there. Nevertheless, though, you would not be able to take these strings and use them lachatchila for another beged, because after all, you have to start with 12 gudlin, 12 thumb lengths of each of the strings before you start tying them on. And here you're going to be tying them new onto a beged, so they need to have their full length of 12 gudlin. The mice that the strings that are sold nowadays tend to be a lot longer than 12 gudlin anyhow, so it's not necessarily such an issue. But in principle, we talked about there the 12 gudlin, how you measure it after the tzitzis are wound or before they're wound, etc. So you may not have such an issue if a little bit of it is torn off, but if you have more than a certain amount torn off, then yeah, replace it with another string before you tie that group onto another beged. So the Alter Rebbe says that if you have, so let's say of the four long strings, one of them is partially broken and you want to replace it with another one and then take the one new one, the three old ones, and put them onto another beged, go right ahead. The fact is, what the Alter Rebbe is saying is, sorry, he's saying that if one of the strings rip and you tie an addition onto it to make it the proper length, that would be fine. Then when it's tied together, it's considered like chotechad mamash, it's considered like literally one string, and therefore it's valid now to take that whole group and put them on another beged.